Listen, so
isn't that cool?
This is not the same thing, but it's very funny.
It's not related at all. Let me tell you this completely unrelated story.
I had a good friend in college, a big old Greek guy that knew he slept talked a lot, and so
is
he
it
got
sleep
this
talked
app.
Or slept talk?
I have no idea, but we're gonna go with slept talk because that's what I said. but he had this app that would, anytime you started to make noise in your sleep, it would turn on and record the sound you were making.
That's
and
a cool
keep
app
it for you.
Yeah.
Right, and so he set it for the first night. Woke up in the morning and saw that he had like a couple of very substantial blocks of noise. He's all excited. So we turned it on. It was just him breaking wind for like a minute.
That's good. I like that.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunny podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How you doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Excellent. Welcome back. Not in the studio. We have shifted studios.
That's right. In our temporary studio.
Our other studio is also a temporary studio. Right. So it's we don't really have a studio per se.
One of these days.
Yet. It's coming.
Yes.
The day will come.
The day will come.
Like yes. It'll come swiftly in the night like a thief. That's
right.
What the Lord tells me.
Sure.
For now,
a thief will break
into
your home and build a studio.
Ooh. That'd be the most handy thief. Thank
right.
you. Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, so we so if it sounds a little awkward or different today, it's the space we're in. Definitely not
just us.
Our conversation quality.
Whatever happens. It's
can we
the
use
space.
That disclaimer every time we
absolutely.
Record?
Yeah, yeah.
If
yeah.
it's awkward, it's not
just,
us.
It's just in life
space.
In general. Yeah. If I sound awkward, if you're talking to me and I sound awkward, it's the space we're in. It's fine.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's conversationally, no matter where you are, it's really...
Yeah,
it's just the space.
Right? Yeah, if this had, soundproofing walls, trust me, this conversation would be much better.
If this was different people, this conversation would be incredible.
If there were three other people in this room, better or worse, impossible to say,
right.
Maybe better, but... Yeah. So today we're talking story part two.
All right.
Yes. So
Hero's journey continues.
At least we hope you're prepared.
Well,
Elise is a game day player. She's always prepared.
I might be the game day player for this particular topic, depending on what kind of leading questions you ask me.
Oh, I assumed you were going to ask us the questions. But
this is going to be fun.
The Royal We did a podcast about story back in the fall. I was not present for that one.
I'm not invited.
I'm disappointed that I missed it. Thankfully, I'm here for the sequel, which is inevitably going to be worse.
Set ourselves up for success.
Right.
Well, I mean, sequels are generally worse than the originals.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a sequel that you prefer to the original?
Oh, for sure. I prefer Terminator 2 over Terminator.
Okay.
And I prefer Captain America Winter Soldier over Captain America First Avenger.
Yeah.
So. The Two Towers over the Fellowship of the Ring.
Mm.
I'd say,
Interesting.
That's part of a trilogy. You know, that's a little tougher because was it one work that's divided into three parts or is it a proper sequel? Hard to say, right?
Mm. Yeah.
But there's probably a couple others out there that the sequel, Godfather Part 2 is, or Empire Strikes Back is much better than Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, also a sequel, or a trilogy for the first.
Yeah. But I think that there's enough
Patrick
space.
Said it, so.
I know.
I think, though, he did not have Empire Strikes Back written when he published or produced Star Wars.
Yeah.
So
and Tolkien just had one like 9 billion pages.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Tolkien had. If he had a 900 page novel divided into three parts.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. All right. So anyway.
He had War and Peace. And he said, you know what this needs?
Yeah.
Parts.
Orcs.
Parts and orcs.
Yeah.
Before we get that, we've got some news to go over.
Before we go over news, can I offer a retraction from last week's news story? This is. We can keep recording. You're good.
Oh,
yeah, sure, okay. Sure.
So
what
I
did we
said,
even talk about last.
Well,
week?
So the news story was about
did
AI
say
and
stupid?
I didn't say anything stupid. It was about AI and interviews.
Yes,
right?
But not me. I'm not here.
Right. It's hard to say. Inconclusive evidence. All right. It was about AI and job interviews, and I came on fully supportive of this process.
Uh-huh. You did.
I did. Came on a little strong.
Sure.
Turns out, did some research, listened to some things. And found out that maybe I should turn my mind. And I'm still in support of the work of AI, but I think there's a lot more bias in the AI creation than I was aware of. And so I retract some of my fully on boardness to say, you know what, maybe I need to slow my roll on the proverbial AI in the job. In a process.
How brave of you.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to...
Our listeners were deeply concerned.
I'm trying to demonstrate how we learn new things and grow into a new position.
Although you might be turning off our robot listeners.
Yeah. I'm willing to take that risk.
Which was half of our listenership. Cool. All right.
We're going to Texas, a Texas school.
We're not going to Texas. We're not going for the news. We're staying in Texas.
Maybe we'll have some retractions about this news story later.
Probably. I still stand by that Subway bread is cake, so that's fine.
Yeah, well, so does
Ireland.
Yeah. The Irish Supreme Court. We're good.
I'm fine with it being cake.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
cake sandwich.
Anyway, Texas school district up in the Lubbock area. Have you ever been to Lubbock?
Nope.
I lived there for a year. It's home of the world's
weird
largest,
flex, but okay.
Yeah, home of the world's largest single story mall. Don't you worry about that.
Cool.
Didn't know that was a ton of chain restaurants. What's that?
I said I didn't know that was a record that needed to be held.
Well, it's got it.
So the
largest single story mall.
You bet. So you bet.
Most square footage of a single story mall. Is that
sure? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not really that much of a brag. I mean, that's...
I have no idea how big a single-story mall can be. I mean, I imagine as big as you can...
I mean, how big is it?
It's fairly large. I went in it once. Okay. So.
Does it feel bigger than most two-story malls that you've been in?
I went in it once.
Come on, man.
It's like a labyrinth.
You're setting us all
like
up for this.
Foot lockers.
Okay. I mean, I was not like, ooh.
I hope there's a minotaur.
Let me get a selfie at the single-story mall.
It's like a D&D dungeon.
Yeah. You walk through...
Can we delete that?
Every time you turn around, there's another foot locker. It's like, is this the same foot locker?
Anyway, wow.
Whoops.
Don't bring up a mall if you don't want us to go down a D&D labyrinth hole, all right?
The school district is in trouble.
In Lubbock.
Like, in Lubbock area. Because for one of the classes, a class assignment was to introduce chivalry courting rules to the students to practice for a day.
Okay.
So for a day,
they were supposed to follow these chivalry rules.
10 rules for women, 10 rules for men. We're not going to go over all 20 rules, but I'll give you some highlights.
Yeah. I'm already
nervous.
Give
us the top three for each one.
Yeah. And then they had to get a adult to sign off whenever the students would do this.
Ah, okay.
So the thing said, like, hear ye, here's our chivalry rules to practice. I'm not sure what the point of this is. It's hard to say from the news sources I read about it if this was supposed to be like, wow, weren't things awful, you know, 500 years ago, and aren't they better now? Or it sounds maybe a little bit awful, a little like, weren't things great 500 years ago?
Right.
What class was this for?
I don't know.
Oh, good.
This was I believe a parent of a student, like, took a screenshot of the assignment and, like, uploaded it to a Facebook
and
group.
Boom.
And
boom.
Spread from there. Okay. What do you want, the gentleman rules or the female rules first?
Let's go gentleman rules.
That's probably a good thought.
We need to ease into it.
I feel like I have a bad feeling about the rules for women.
Yeah, the women's rules are going to be worse.
All right. Gentlemen will dress appropriately in jackets and ties or suits.
Okay.
You know.
I guess maybe a borderline modesty rule for men.
That's not terrible, right? Okay, I mean, so for a day you wear a suit to school, whatever.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, that's a dumb rule, but okay.
Yes.
But it's chivalry. It's all dumb. Oh, wait. Hold on.
That's chivalry is also, I think, combat rules is how it started. Not really about, like, courtship.
It's like you won't stab somebody in the back as they're walking away from
while
you.
While they're wearing a suit. If they're wearing a suit, fair game.
Right.
Yeah. Or jousting rules. Like it's not supposed to be a pointy stick, you know, like a dulled one.
Right.
This was never about
unless
holding the door
open
for somebody.
Unless you're that bad guy in
Knight's Tale. Yeah, so these rules are definitely a little bit of chivalry rules /
British Society slash
this just sounds pretty good.
Yeah. You know,
like, all right, so what else we got? Wear a suit, but not of armor, of cloth.
All females in the class and all female faculty members will be considered noble women and be addressed as milady.
All right. I mean, for like a weird high school assignment for a day, I don't feel like that's... offensive.
Okay.
I mean, it's weird, and it's a, but you know, it's not like.
Sure. How would you feel, Elise? High school you, all the boys are calling you m'lady.
I mean, I was real like goth in high school, so.
So it's not that
it
far off.
Yeah.
It's a little, this little Renaissance festy. Gentlemen will rise when a lady walks into the room, and gentlemen should bow when greeting a lady.
Okay, bowing is weird, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
None of this.
But all
offensive.
Of it's weird.
It's all just weird. Yeah.
Gentlemen will create a yummy treat of friendship in the medieval tradition of coded.
A yummy treat of friendship.
Yeah, coded
Can
message for a lady in his class. This is a good question. I'm not sure this is really a thing that happened, that the gentleman provided yummy treats of friendship.
No. So this is supposed to be like, I give a lady a snack? Is that what this is supposed to be?
Sure, why not?
This reminds me of that thing. I don't know if you guys saw this. I think it went viral on Facebook recently.
It's
like the witch's handbook or whatever, and said you can fascinate a woman by giving her a piece of cheese. So it reminds me of that.
Like, doesn't tell you what kind of cheese.
No, it's left up for interpretation.
But the woman will be fascinated.
Right.
Yeah, I guess if you went up to a woman and gave her some cheese... Look, man or woman, I would also be fascinated.
This is fascinating, yeah.
You give me a cube of cheese.
What do you do with this?
A slice of American. Here you go. a gentleman will sing or recite a few lines of poetry to the ladies in their class. Ugh. Poems will be memorized and must be respectable poems of romantic nature.
So not body poems. Yeah.
So we're not dropping Tupac. We're,
if it's romantic.
Right.
But appropriate, I think, would be the key there. Yeah.
No nursery rhymes is also what it says.
But those are romantic and appropriate.
Maybe a limerick, you know, you could do.
Nursery rhymes are romantic.
Okay. And then it also says on both assignments for men and women, they can continue into the evening if the parents so wish. So the parents can make them do this at home.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool. Yeah. So what were the rules for ladies? All right.
Here we go.
Oh, boy.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah.
Number one, ladies to dress in a feminine manner.
Oh.
In school dress code, it gets worse, to please the men.
Ouch. Yep. Okay. Inappropriate. Inappropriate. All right. Continue.
I'm
what
like
else
itchy
we got?
All over. This is awful.
Ladies must address all men by respectively by title with a lowered head and curtsy.
So... all men? Like, all men. You talk to your classmate, and you have to lower your head and curtsy and call him sir, or like...
Yeah. You know, I don't know much about ancient or medieval England, but I can definitely tell you the queen is not doing this to the peasants.
Okay? Right.
So all men is already thrown out
when
it came down to medieval rules of courtship.
Yeah. You only had to do this to people who are below you.
Definitely not above you, not below you.
All right, I said that backwards. Yeah,
it's fine. We got it.
This is why I don't exist in the monarchy.
Sure. This is why.
me and Meghan Markle, we don't get it. Yeah. It's fine.
Not the bloodline.
All right.
Did I get that one right? Was that the right person?
She has left the royal family.
She's
right?
The one who was just on the interview with Oprah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
She bounced.
Look at that.
Well,
cultural reference nailed.
Really, I guess he bounced because she just kind of like came in and came out real quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, like,
isn't that what bouncing is?
I guess so. Sure. All right, anyway. Ladies must walk behind men daintily.
Mm-mm.
Sure.
As if their feet were bound.
As if they're...
What?
Don't ask me.
Isn't that specifically like old Asian practices? Thing? Well,
I'm imagining
Mulan at this moment.
Yeah, right. This is memoirs of a geisha.
Right.
Yeah, okay, cool.
I'll give you two more here. Outside the classroom, okay, inside the classroom, this would be okay. Ladies cannot show intellectual superiority if it would offend the men around them.
Only outside the classroom. This is fine. This just means in the hallway, you can't point out that you're smarter than me. I'm sorry. That's really terrible. I shouldn't even be laughing at how awful it is. I'm laughing out of discomfort. I apologize.
Right.
Yeah.
This reminds me of my high school experience, but...
But it wasn't...
That's ironic.
Right, it wasn't 10 chivalry rules you had to follow for a day.
It was just high school, yeah.
Ladies must obey any reasonable request of a male. If not sure if it is considered reasonable, ladies can check with their teachers.
Who are probably male, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so this got out. School district said, no, we should not do this.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know, again, if this is supposed to be, look, aren't these things awful? And even if that is the point of the lesson, this feels like, I mean, I've seen school districts get in trouble for like, act like a slave for a day to show how awful it was.
Yeah.
That's still not really appropriate.
No,
like,
not.
So like, this is certainly ladies act beneath the men in your room, and even if it is to show how inappropriate it used to be, I don't think that this would be really in any way appropriate for a classroom setting.
Right. Also, they're not really doing a good job of selling it as like, look how awful this was, when you call it your code of chivalry for the day.
Yeah. I think it'd be one thing to like do this during a class period. Say like, hey, here in this class, in this room, we're gonna do this Shakespearean whatever thing.
Yeah.
And this is how we're gonna treat each other for like this 45-minute period with a period of discussion at the end of it to say what was interesting or bad or different or whatever about this. That would be one thing. This is weird.
Yeah.
And makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I laugh.
I mean,
because that's what I do in uncomfortable situations.
If you get class credit for pretending you're not smarter than the dudes,
nailed it. Do I get extra credit depending on how hard I have to try?
Right, right.
If I can make this idiot feel like I'm not smarter than him, can I get extra credit for that?
Yeah, don't worry. I've been not showing my intellectual superiority for the majority of my life. So.
Check.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Pretty awful. Yeah, Elise, any other thoughts? I know, you, even when I mentioned that this was a thing, you were just like, oh, my blood is already boiling.
Yeah, so. So I do not hate the high school that I went to.
Sure.
In a lot of ways, it was a good place, but
it's
rough
when you got to preface your statement with that.
Right. So it was a private Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, a lot of the same principles were there, you know, very heavily skewed towards controlling the female student body.
And masked in the guile of Christianity.
Exactly. Modesty or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
So it's just, I don't know. I have a strong reaction to that sort of thing.
As you should. I think this is obviously so offensive on so many levels. I mean, like, ladies, you cannot show intellectual superiority. You have to clean up after the men or any reasonable request. Yes. And you don't even get to decide if it's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The teacher gets to decide if it's a reasonable
because you
request.
Can't show intellectual superiority.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that is just really... Or, like, your dress is to please the men. That's the first one. The first one you read is make sure how your dress is pleasing to men. Is so gross.
What does that even mean?
Especially because I think most of the school dress code is, like, you should dress away to not please the men.
So my high school had very specific rules about like skirt and short length and you know that none of the dude dress code was like that. The dude dress code was keep your hair trimmed up off your ears and collar. That was it. Like
that was already more of a dress code than I had in mind.
Right. So like, and just we had a litany of stuff that we could not wear as female students versus keep your hair trimmed as a male student.
Well, look, the men have to call ladies m'lady.
So, all day.
It's what a chore.
Pretty much equivalent. Yeah.
Listen here, m'lady.
Which is also a thing, like, weirdos say to girls to think they're being charming.
As we
it's not, by the way. If you're listening to this thinking, like, oh, if I called a girl I'm interested in m'lady and tipped my fedora, she would be interested. She won't be.
There will not be a second date.
There will be a first one.
Wear a fedora. There will not be a second date.
Aw, don't hate on the fedoras. There. Come on.
Do you have a fedora?
No, I don't, but in the right context. Fedoras and fake glasses, right? That's like the way to go.
I don't know.
Let's move on.
That's the hipster tree.
I don't need to have this opinion on the internet. Come on.
All right, story part two. Electric Boogaloo. Here we go.
Electric Boogaloo.
First, to get us there, why don't y'all remind me, what was story part one about? Let's go there. So
that's an excellent question.
Do we remember? Okay, I remember. Basically, I think what we touched on in story part one is this idea that narrative structure, which is like the rhythm of the way that most stories are told, is a thing that exists outside of literature as well. That it is a thing that we structure stories on because that's sort of the natural way that we interact with life and stories to begin with.
Yeah, it's not about inventing narrative structure. It's about noticing the narrative structure that's inherent in the world around us and crafting stories to fit that because our natural tendency is to relate to those and connect to those stories because it's our natural existence in the world. Mm-hmm. And the Bible, I think we're kind of what we're getting at, the Bible does that same thing. The Bible taps into those natural ebbs and flows of stories with rises and falls and plot movements and heroes and downfalls and all that stuff along the way.
Yeah, and I think one really interesting point, too, that we did not touch on in the last one, but I'm going to say right now because it's a really quick little nugget that we should have touched on, is that there are stories that do not follow this complete narrative structure.
Sure.
They do not do well as stories because our brains do not actually recognize them as a complete story. Mm-hmm. We say there's something, there's a discomfort in the way that you interact with them because they do not hit these beats that you're accustomed to.
Mm. That's a great point, yeah.
Right.
That's probably why I don't like the Book of Eli. I don't know. I was going to pick a book, but I, you know.
Book of Eli?
Yeah, sure.
That's what you were going for?
The movie?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not my favorite book either.
Yeah, but... yeah.
It's a movie. Yeah, I think this is really interesting. So this also kind of ties into what we're doing as a church. Our Lenten theme is kind of a based on story. It's kind of this hero's journey kind of idea through Mark. Looking at Jesus as kind of the central hero figure. And when we look at a hero's journey, which I think is a powerful part of storytelling, and a lot of story follows a hero's journey, it's kind of like this idea of a hero is starting off at home, and then it kind of makes a circle, so they get further and further away from home, and that would be kind of the lowest point of their journey, and then they rise above it, and then they come back to the home, bringing a new knowledge, new treasure, new thing back to where they came from. So, and there's a lot of elements in a hero's journey that go into it. So, if you're looking at like a movie, you know, a good example of a hero's journey could be Luke Skywalker, Katniss Everdeen. You know, those would be some pretty good examples of like, this is a person who's starting off at home. And you kind of see them get further and further away until they finally reach the lowest of the low point. So for Luke Skywalker, if you want to say over the three movies, I would say probably finding out Darth Vader is his father. Yeah. That's the lowest point of his journey. Where like, can he rise above this?
Yeah.
For Katniss Everdeen in The Hunger Games, I would say it's the death of Rue. Kind of like this young girl that she is trying to protect in these bloody awful games and who dies in front of her. That's the lowest point. Can she rise above it? And so these kind of things. So if you're looking at Jesus as a kind of a hero's journey, and Jesus's journey is not quite the same because he starts and finished. His start and finish aren't exactly major leaps compared to some other characters. Sure. But for Jesus, the death on the cross would be the lowest of the low point, the furthest from home you could possibly get. And so that's kind of what we're exploring at Lent. And I think that's a powerful version because that is a cycle that is, like you guys mentioned, repeated in our own lives. When I used to work at summer camp, I compared a week at summer camp to a hero's journey to a kid. They're all heroes coming into this. They're leaving home, sometimes for the first time, to go on this journey, this quest. And there might be moments where they feel furthest from home that they've ever been. Whether that's an emotional moment around a campfire, whether that's jumping off of a pole to grab on a trapeze, whatever it is, they might have this moment and experience. And how you, as a counselor, this is when I was working there, guide them through that moment is really an important part so they can go back home with new knowledge, changed in some way. And so, so let's maybe start with the hero's journey. I don't know if you guys got into that on the story podcast. I did listen to it, but I can't remember everything.
No, we didn't go into the hero's journey. That's not part of our initial story.
So I think let's start there since... So that's what we're doing here at Lord Life. I think that's a good place to start. So, you know, Elise, do you have any other kind of examples or insight into this hero's journey story structure?
So the Lord of the Rings is really like the classic example of hero's journey. And it's kind of, it might even be where that term comes from, is from Tolkien. Don't quote me on that. I would have to look it up. But a lot of what we talk about in modern fantasy genre writing today actually does come from The Lord of the Rings. So it's sort of like the, almost the like original hero's journey plot archetype.
And I think what's good about Lord of the Rings, and what maybe sets it apart from other narrative works of its time, is Tolkien is able to craft several hero's journeys within one structure. That it's not just Frodo's hero's journey. You also have Sam's. It's running kind of parallel.
Aragorn.
Yeah. Gandalf has a hero's journey. Almost every character has. All the hobbits do. You probably would say maybe Legolas and Gimli don't quite get one. But that's not really necessarily. You can only have somebody.
Supporting characters.
Legolas has also been around for like a million years. So,
yeah,
you know,
he's been through it.
I mean, and movies-wise, they're a little bit more sidekick characters. Yeah. And they don't quite rise above it. Like, you know, Star Wars, you know, really, Chewbacca doesn't really have a hero's journey. I think Han Solo does. You know, like he's kind of elevated more to the main, the forefront. The sidekick doesn't necessarily get that space. Any other parts of the hero's journey that we want to kind of like really kind of highlight while we're here discussing it?
Well, I think what's fascinating, right? You know, Elise is mentioning that like Tolkien is where the hero's journey kind of is coined as far as like modern narrative structure, but we can trace this back throughout history. It's not that Tolkien invented the hero's journey; it's that you know, we just kind of point to that as the modern point. So we can go back and you can read the Odyssey and you can see, you know, Odysseus's hero's journey. Odysseus's, that's hard to say. His hero journey. You can go back and you can look at the structures of stories in the Bible and you can see those hero's journey. Right? We just did our episode on Samuel and you can kind of see miniature hero's journeys of both Saul and David as they kind of rise and fall through this process. And you can trace that through other biblical narratives and characters as well, including Jesus and others that come after. I think Paul has kind of a mini hero's journey that's played out through Acts. And then you get a very different perspective of the hero's journey because you get Paul's letters. And so you get to hear from the hero themselves what their journey is like. And you know, this is one of the major works that scholars are doing now is piecing together, well, when did Paul write these different letters and how do these all fit together to create a more cohesive narrative of who Paul was and what Paul's structure was. And for Paul in particular, and for Jesus as well, right, it taps into this realization that the hero's journey is the journey that we are all on.
Yeah.
It's not just this thing that we've created for narrative thing because it makes for a good movie. It makes for a good movie because it's our natural way of moving through the world, that we are always moving away from home and moving towards a low point and then rising above that and moving back towards whatever that new home might be. Because the home doesn't always circle back. But it does, you know, you're rising and falling with that process.
Yeah, I think the thing that appeals to us so much about the hero's journey and the thing that's actually unique to it in terms of a plot structure is that it's cyclical like that. It's a very circular plot. You leave, you encounter points A, B, C, dark night of the soul, you change, you come back, new status quo. And it's a very circular plot versus like a descent into madness plot, which is just a straight line down, you know, or a straight line up, you know, if it's a rags to riches type plot or something like that, you know. But I think that in particular, like you said, that hero's journey really resonates with us because we like this idea of cycling back and starting over and coming back fresh.
Yeah, and I love that piece because I think we do like that story. I think we love to see that story for other people. I think we either forget or intentionally ignore the reality that that's our truth as well. I think, you know, when we're in our dark night of the soul, we are always convinced that we're going to be there forever.
Yeah.
And when, you know, when we're rising up and in our status quo, we always want to stay there forever. We always think, like, oh, I just need to hold on to this.
Right.
And, you know, as we start to fall out of that status quo, we're always reaching back, trying to hold on to that, saying, no, that's where I want to be without living into this breath of this is the path, this is the right, you know, and this is all, it's all part of it, so to speak. And I'm not saying I'm any better at this, right? So you know, this is incredibly difficult, but I think there is a reality that if we live into the Spirit's movement in our life, we're going to feel that natural ebb and flow. And the dark night of the soul, then we're still comforted and we're still encouraged in the midst of that because we're holding on to that faith. And so, you know, if there is a constant, the constant is the grace and love of God that's, you know, with us in each of these places as we move through this pattern of life that we're in.
Well, yeah, and I think what's hard too is, you know, when we watch a movie or a TV show or read a book that has this highlight of the hero's journey, the far from home is usually obvious.
Yes,
and
literally far from home.
And it's also usually, you can see and respect like a conquering moment that we might not necessarily have in our own lives. It's hard to say, what is the conquering moment that I had, you know, that one might have when you have cancer?
Right.
Or what is the conquering moment when a spouse dies?
Right.
Like that's hard to say, even though that is far from home. That is very far from where you are. What is that one moment, that singular time, you know, where you get to slay a dragon and then move on? You know, that's not necessarily how it completely works in our own lives. We don't necessarily have that. And also, sometimes it's hard to know that you're even really far from home. You know, that you're really even in these dark periods because, well, you're not living a true fictional story.
Right.
You're living real life.
Yeah.
And sometimes we choose to go far from home and then we were like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Where am I?
Yeah. I think that's really fascinating. I don't remember where I read this, but it was something about how, you know, fairy tales and whatnot always end with the marriage and they lived happily ever after, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
The fairy tale doesn't go into, and then for the next 20 years, they, you know, slowly descended into their own madness because so-and-so didn't wash the dishes and so-and-so, sure. you know, chews too loudly. And so, you know, they didn't, the fairy tale never goes into that kind of steady state of life. It's, yeah. it's always the rise to this great climactic moment mm-hmm. and then, ta-da, you're there. Yeah. And that does give us a false sense of what our own story is supposed to be like, because our story doesn't end with that climactic moment, right? The marriage doesn't end with the wedding.
Right.
You know, and hopefully the marriage didn't begin with the wedding either. Right. Right? Hopefully it's a process that goes on and on my thought trailed off, but that's okay. where I was.
No, I mean, I think it's one of those things that where self-awareness is really key. Mm. If you want to sort of take any sort of application from this, right? Like, you have to be able to step back a little bit and at least try and recognize, like, okay, what do I really think that I'm experiencing right now, you know? And I do think we can get better at this as time goes on, though, you know? Mm-hmm. The more experience you have going through, you know, life cycles or whatever, where you can look back and say, okay, you know, that was my conquering moment or whatever. That was really a dark night of the soul that I didn't see, you know, like this was sort of my murky middle or whatever. If you look back on that, I think it's easier to recognize patterns as you go, as yeah. you're actively yeah. in them.
Yeah. So I think one part of the hero's journey that I think it's easy to overlook and miss. And I intentionally kind of skipped over when I gave this explanation is in every work of fiction that has a really great hero's journey or a really powerful one, almost always our hero starts off with a mentor character. Mm-hmm. So Luke has Obi-Wan, mm-hmm. Katniss has Haymitch, mm-hmm. Frodo has Gandalf. Mm-hmm. If we really think hard here, if you could think of a great hero's journey, great movie with the hero has this thing, they probably have a mentor attached yep. to them. And I think that's one of the things maybe we forget in my own hero's journey mm-hmm. of who is my mentor?
Yeah.
Who is this person who's helping guide me and preparing me for what's next ahead? Or who am I mentoring? Who yeah. am I preparing for what's next ahead in their life? And this is something that's really powerful in faith, this idea of mentorship or for both ends. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's easy for us to forget that this is part of our story. Because it's really like, if you ask me, like, Patrick, who's your mentor? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who are you mentoring? Well, I have a youth in my youth group, but is that intentional mentoring? Yeah. Right. Or is that like, this is kind of like just my job right now? Or is that yeah. like, I'm really doing kind of this one-on-one, trying to prepare somebody for what's next in their life? And probably, if you're listening to this, you might be like, I don't know the answer to those questions.
Yeah.
I don't know who I'm mentoring and I don't know who's mentoring me. So what is the value, again, in story form of a mentor character, and how can we relate that to real life?
Oh, I think that it shows up in stories because we love the idea of having somebody to lean on that has the answers and that's wiser than sure. you. I don't think it shows up necessarily because it's reality for most of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Should it be?
Probably. I mean, seems like things would go smoother.
Yeah, so I can look back on my own story, right? And I can point to people who have been mentors to me.
Sure.
And I can see the value in those periods of time and the way in which my life was shaped by that relationship. But all of them also kind of, you know, they were mentors for a season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we get caught into this, well, if I'm a mentor, I have to be a mentor for life. And,
yeah.
you know, because Gandalf is there for the whole journey and, well, Obi-Wan dies, but Obi-Wan comes back yeah. from the grave to, you know, continue to mentor Luke. And, you know, sure. so, yeah, so I think we get caught in that. But I think we just have to let that space speak. The mentor maybe doesn't have to be as defined as the story would define it, but I think that there are points where we have to be willing to be mentored and to be mm-hmm. provide mentoring in both, whether it's intentional, oh, I'm going to walk with you for these months or for these years, or it's, hey, in this moment I need to hear your wisdom, right, or I have something
yeah.
to offer you.
Yeah.
Well, and not in a condescending way, just sure. in a yeah
well, when story form almost always the mentor cannot be there for that right. lowest of sure. the low moment.
It's that moment of learning to stand on your own as yes. as the hero in the hero's yeah. journey.
So Obi-Wan has to die for Luke to continue on. Mm-hmm. Gandalf also dies, and Frodo has to continue yeah. on without him. You know, like, that's just part of kind of how this works. Gandalf comes back.
Mm-hmm. Gandalf kind of dies. I don't know. It's weird.
He takes a timeout.
It's murky.
Yeah, he's like, all right, I'm good.
He takes a nap.
But
fights a, you know, demon thing while he's napping.
Yeah.
Well, both those things, like, you have to, like, reach a point where the hero steps out of that shadow.
Sure.
That has to happen. So, mm-hmm. you know, the question maybe, you know, if we say we're not really quite sure how we fit or tap into this now, you know, maybe we could say, like, well, who has mentored you? Who are people in your life you leaned on that helped prepare you for today? I know for me, you know, my youth leader when I was in high school was mm-hmm. a person that, whether they knew it or not, was helping prepare me for obstacles that came ahead and things like that. It's a driving factor that made me want to pursue youth ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't really have a connection with this person anymore. I don't call Jeff up and say, like, hey, Jeff, I've got these issues. Can you solve them for me? You know, but by that mentorship and that tutelage, it prepares me for what is coming in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you have experienced that at different parts of your life, but I think that there's value because the hero's journey is cyclical. It's always repeating
mm-hmm.
of asking us those same questions, right? Like, who am I helping prepare and who's helping prepare me, you know, is valuable when it comes to issues of faith and life. And last week, I believe we talked about the need of faith and community, and this is why,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, whether you're in a small group and you're like, I'm really leaning on the wisdom of this person in the small group, and they might not even know that they're my Obi-Wan right now. Like, they might have no idea. And I might not even know that they're my Obi-Wan as in this thing. But I'm really leaning on somebody else's wisdom and knowledge to help guide me in things in my own life.
Yeah.
Is valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also add referring to someone as your Obi-Wan to the list of things that come off creepier than you intend them to
be. I was going
to
say, do you tell them that?
Yeah.
Is that
if someone told me I'm their Obi-Wan, it would be the greatest compliment of my life.
I feel like it's like showing up to a first date in a fedora.
Right. I was going to say m'lady, but sure. Yeah, it works.
Look, I'm just telling you, if somebody told me that...
M'lady, you are my Obi-Wan.
Goodbye.
Right. See ya.
Yeah.
You know, look, we're all different here, but if somebody told me that... Best day of my life. So, listeners, write us in. Tell me I'm your Obi-Wan. It's fine. You know, so, I think that gives us kind of a good understanding of the hero's journey, kind of what we're trying to accomplish here in Lent, lifting up Jesus as the ultimate hero. And
Jesus is my hero.
He doesn't hit necessarily every mark of the classic hero's journey. One of the things that's neat is C.S. Lewis called the Christ story the true myth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a wonderful way of looking at it, that he was saying, like, all these myths have these beats, and they're all found in Jesus, and maybe even sometimes streaming from Jesus, all centered here in truth and reality. And this was a defining moment of his conversion, of landing on this idea that J.R.R. Tolkien helped him get to, the idea that Jesus is the true myth.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a powerful thing, that all story found in Christ is powerful.
Yeah.
Right.
And so...
Side note, I love that Tolkien and Lewis were friends. Mm-hmm. I just think that's like...
Very cute.
Yeah.
The Inklings.
Yes. And they both wrote some great fantasies. They did. Very different fantasy. Mm-hmm. At times I like Narnia more than Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I 100% like Narnia more than the Lord of the Rings. I'm not ashamed.
I think...
Maybe be a little bit. Maybe
just like... No, I think now
I like Lord of the Rings more, but I mean that... it's also so... rich and sometimes to its detriment.
I mean, this is an opinion based on readability, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
The Lord of the Rings has about 5,000 more pages than it needs to, and it's just very dense on a lot of stuff that is very cool but really doesn't matter in terms of the story. And Narnia is very lean, very quick reads, very impactful.
Yeah,
I like them a lot. They're fun.
Nice.
There you go. All right, but let's talk about the ultimate storyteller here in Jesus. If all stories found in Jesus, talk about some of Jesus stories.
Yes.
So, Jesus' story, we usually call a parable.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it's in the Bible, so it needs to have a fancy name.
Yes.
I mean, so parables are used throughout cultures, right? I mean, Jesus did not invent the parable, and Jesus did not end with parables. But parables are short stories that convey a particular meaning. Uniquely with Jesus, I think the parables are not generally fully explained. Often, parables come with an explanation. Only one I can think of that Jesus actually explains in Scripture saying, okay, here, guys, this is what this means. Right. Just so you know. Don't screw this up in 2008. Right. This is what this means. Every other parable, Jesus is like, I don't know, you figure it out for yourself.
Right.
But yeah, Jesus tells all sorts of great parables. And some of these, I think, will hit these beats more fully than others.
Sure. Some parables are literally two sentences long.
Right. Yeah.
And so, I mean...
Hard to hit a lot of beats in two sentences. Sure. Yeah. But in Hebrew, you know, the words are broken up differently. Yeah. So it's easier to hit those beats. But so let's take probably one of the most famous ones. In fact, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
The prodigal son.
Sure.
Is a great parable. So we can remember this story, right? So the son says, Dad, I basically wish you were dead, so give me my share of the inheritance. Son wanders off, spends all his money. Eventually
there's a famine,
right? There's a famine. Thank you for listening. There's a famine. He's feeding the pigs. Someone says, you know what? I should go back and beg for forgiveness, and maybe my father will treat me as a servant. And as he comes back, the father runs out onto the road to meet him, greets him, kisses him, gives him a ring, puts on a robe, says, we're going to throw a party. Hoorah. Everybody's happy, except for the older brother, who's all grumpy and been like, I've been here for years and you never even gave me a goat. I don't know why the goat was the animal of choice, but didn't even get that. And he refuses to go out. And the dad eventually comes and talks to him and says, you know, you've been here for years. Everything that I have is yours. But my son who was dead is alive. What was lost has now been found and seen.
Yep.
So let's just talk through some of the beats that we kind of see in just that parable. I mean, this is definitely one of the more elaborate parables that Jesus tells.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some of the beats and highlights that we hear that kind of fit into our general narrative structure and narrative understanding?
Yeah, well, this is not going to be a hero's journey, this in particular. This is
Did
not
I say
a hero's
it was
journey.
Journey?
No, I'm just prefacing that it's not really a hero's journey. This would be different than what we just talked about.
Yeah, that's fine.
But there is an inciting incident in the son, you know, deciding, you know, he's going to leave. He's going to take the inheritance. He's going to ask for his inheritance, and he's going to leave. And then, oh, you want me to do all of them? Okay.
Well,
yeah, you said let's talk through them.
So. Well, because you're the one who knows the narrative beats.
Okay.
I can tell you the story.
Okay. So then I don't know how much we get of like that in between time, you know, but he goes off. Apparently he squanders some stuff of dissolute living, as we said. And then he has this beat where there's famine, and it's his lowest low point, and he's feeding pigs all of a sudden. And then he has that moment of decision where he says, I'm going to go home and beg for forgiveness. So he does come home.
Yeah.
And then the new status quo, he's welcome with open arms.
Right. And I think that's my favorite part of the story, right, is the surprise ending, because everybody expects, including the son, and this is what makes great stories great, right, is that you expect, oh, well, we all know that dad's going to be pissed when he comes back, right?
Yeah.
You know, dad's going to be angry. Dad's going to say, like, you're lucky that I'm going to have you treat you like a servant. And instead, the dad welcomes him home with open arms and throws this huge party for him.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the hallmarks for me of Jesus' parables is taking stories that we know and can relate to, right? All of us have been in a relationship where someone has said, forget this, I wish you were dead, give me what's mine and I'm out of here. And then they've come crawling back to us, or we've come crawling back to someone else. We've all been in those scenarios, and Jesus takes that story that we know really well and then flips it and says, you think about this, but God is really thinking about this, right?
Yeah.
You know, we can go to the parable of the lost sheep, which is probably another pretty well known, right? If you had 99 sheep and you lose one, who among you wouldn't go and look for that one sheep? And most of us are like,
me.
None of
I
us.
I wouldn't.
None of us would look. We got 99 sheep here to protect. We're not going to go look for that one sheep. Like,
yeah.
Jesus is like, who among you wouldn't go and look for this sheep? Because apparently that's what God is like, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the kingdom of heaven is like, is going out and finding that one lost, knowing that leaves the other 99 in some form of danger, some form of risk, but going out to find them. And that's what I love about those stories and the way that Jesus tells those.
Yeah, I think a lot of the parables, you're going to definitely find a twist ending of some kind. It's going to surprise you. You know, and it certainly will surprise the audience of the time. And I think I like how you mentioned, oftentimes it does not have a clear explanation. And sometimes we'll say, and people are kind of confused or amazed by the story. And so 2,000 years later, if we land on a story of Jesus and we're like, oh, I completely understand it, maybe you don't.
Right.
I'm just
going to
be honest. Like, maybe you don't really fully get it. If you think it's obvious, don't think you're smarter than people who lived 2,000 years ago who are their original listeners and you just have much more knowledge. I think it's okay to say, like, this might have a deeper meaning than I am giving it. Than I'm even aware of.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Even the one parable that Jesus explains, right? So Jesus tells a story about seeds being scattered. And some seeds fall in the path, and some seeds fall in the rich soil, and some seeds fall in the rocky soil, and some seeds get eaten up by the birds, and tells everything that happens to all these different seeds. Even this parable that Jesus explains and says, this is what these seeds are. This is what these seeds are. This is what they represent. it only really makes sense if you understand the context of terrace farming that was happening in, you know, the ancient Israelite culture. Yeah. Like that you had to farm on these hillsides and have these levels, and this is how their farms were structured. It wasn't just, you know, Iowa cornfields for miles and miles in every direction as far as the eye can see, because, you know, if that's our mindset that we go into that parable with, we completely misunderstand. Even though Jesus explains it, we completely misunderstand what's happening in the parable. So, yeah, we can't come to these parables and assume that I've got the perfect explanation. And, you know, there are always new ways to hear this because we read these stories with different lenses, so we highlight different parts of the story. The Good Samaritan's another great one.
We'll pause. I'm going to pause it because one of the ways...
No, I want to talk about that.
I know. We're going to let you get that. One of the ways that I have changed over the time of how I read The Prodigal Son is I no longer see the son as the main character.
Mm.
You know, that I think the original reading, that's how I thought it was made. Now I see the dad is the main character. Uh-huh. The father is going on that hero's journey as well. The lowest of the low is when his son leaves.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, that is the low point, and he welcomes his son in with open arms and then goes to welcome the other son. Because once son A or son B, whatever you want to call it, prodigal son comes home, his journey is over, but the story does not end.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It goes further because the dad is really the main character of the story. Mm-hmm. That's how I now am reading the story. In 10 years, I might say maybe the older son is the main character of the story. Or maybe there is none. I don't know. So I think like being open to saying like, I want to relook at these things, even if I learned them in second grade Sunday school and it seemed obvious then, I think these stories have a deeper meaning. And also, not everything certainly represents 1A to an actual physical, like a comparison. So you can't say, there's a king in this story, that's obviously God. There's a person in the story, that's obviously me. You know, like, that's not always the case either. And some of the... and we probably won't get into this, but the story immediately following the prodigal son is super weird and does not and is a parable that I could walk away from like, I don't think it makes any sense. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Any attempt to really explain it, I always feel falls flat. But we won't get into that one.
Yeah.
This time. Spoiler.
We'll get into
maybe the third the story time.
Yeah.
So Good Samaritan.
The Good Samaritan.
A great story.
Wait. I have one thing I want to say first.
Okay.
I've been sitting on this one the whole time where you talk about parables. Yeah. I love that when somebody asks Jesus a question, because that's really what kicks off most of these parables, right? If somebody says, Jesus, what do you think about X, Y, Z? That he doesn't just answer or give an opinion. He tells them a story. Yeah. And I think that's really crucial because we all hear different things from each story.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this, you know, again last week with the prodigal son. And there's so many different, you know, ways you can approach it and so much nuance there. He actually covers a lot more ground with a story than he does with just an opinion.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is how we get to the Good Samaritan.
The Good Samaritan.
So a lawyer asks,
who is my neighbor?
A lawyer asks Jesus a question. He says, which commandment in the law is greatest? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself, quoting two very important parts of the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And the lawyer comes back and says, but who is my neighbor? And Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we probably remember the Good Samaritan as highlighting the effort of this Samaritan who rescues this person who is beaten and down in the ditch and, you know, brings him to the hotel and, you know, pays for the innkeeper to care for him and does all this great stuff. And it's this great story about someone that you don't expect rescuing someone who's down in the ditch. And so we have come up in the United States with Good Samaritan laws where it says, okay, as far as it is within your ability, you should be expected to help someone who is in danger. And so if you can do these things, it is expected that you do that. There's a great Seinfeld episode. That's the final episode where they're arrested for not upholding a Good Samaritan law because they film someone getting mugged and are laughing on camera rather than doing anything to intercede and help. Anyway, great ending to the series. But in other parts of the world, and specifically in several African nations, there are also Good Samaritan laws. But those Good Samaritan laws revolve around being the ones who are receiving the help because they connect with the story differently, right? We, as Americans, have this preconceived notion of, oh, well, we're definitely the ones who are coming in to do the rescuing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the ones in the ditch who have been beaten up and, you know, need saving. But these, you know, these countries have said, look, we're willing to say we're the ones that connect to these people who are in the ditch. And so the Good Samaritan laws there are around how they are going to receive aid, basically saying we'll receive aid from anyone and everyone, but that does not bind us to your legal or religious or other beliefs, right? That we are still our own free our free person, but we are going to be willing to receive your aid, basing that same thing off of this structure of the story of who is my neighbor. Them basically saying, any of you can act as my neighbor and care for me, but that doesn't mean I have to take on my neighbor's beliefs. Whereas we say, well, it's my job as your neighbor to care for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about who you connect to in that story. And both of those our full perspectives of the story that Jesus is telling, but either one misses what the other one is offering when we only take one perspective.
Sure. I also think it's a good reminder, like, even the people I think are the worst people in this world have compassion and love capabilities.
Yeah.
And even if I think, because, you know, I say, like, I really dislike people like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can be loving, generous, kind human beings. And it's easier for me to, like, ugh. Hard for me to sometimes miss that. Because sometimes I'm not loving and kind and generous. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they are.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's certainly a great reminder. I think that's a wonderful parable of Jesus. You know, usually the ones we really, really like are the ones that are really, really long. You know, like,
yeah.
The ones that he gives us the most to work with.
Yeah.
Is and have a lot of different characters are the easiest to kind of latch on to and think about when he's like, you know, the kingdom of God is like a giant pearl and you find it and you buy it. You're like, okay, cool.
Yeah,
like,
got it.
like, all right, I get it. I don't really get it, but okay. I mean, that's just much harder to kind of like really find nuance and, you know, but Good Samaritan, Prodigal Son, those are these long form stories that Jesus would tell that are really powerful. Are there any other thoughts on biblical stories?
Nah, I'm good.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it'd be helpful, maybe, hey, let's recommend a story. You know, like we're talking about story, let's recommend one.
Oh, yeah.
So.
You didn't come prepared.
So we'll take a time right now. Think of a story that you have read recently or watched or listened to. I don't know, whatever you do. Mm-hmm. And recommend a story.
Oh, I got one.
Okay.
So my favorite read of, I guess it's the fall at this point, was a book by Grady Hendrix called The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. This is probably not a book that you want to let your kids read. It is a horror story, but it's also a comedy.
About vampires.
About vampires, yes. In Charleston.
It has nothing to do with vampires. It's actually about werewolves.
Right.
And in New York City. It's weird, but you know.
Right. Well, it's set in Charleston in the 90s, sort of against the backdrop of all of this, like, all the concern about like satanic influence and that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
And it's about a group of moms in a book club that realize that a vampire has infiltrated their neighborhood and their spouses and they're going to take him down. And it's incredible. One of the things that I love so much about it is that it does hit all of these defined narrative beats, but it does it in a way that's surprising.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really, really fun read.
Okay. I've also read it and I really liked it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except when I read it, I would told Elise, like, oh, I'm reading this book. And she's like, have you gotten to this part yet?
I would be like, I did sort
I
of
know.
Spoil it.
I haven't.
I'm a very fast reader. And I will say I really love, like, a middle-aged female protagonist, too.
Okay. It does, yeah.
Yeah, we get our moment, you know. I'm not necessarily middle-aged, but I love that.
Sure. I'll go with a TV show on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It does have a female protagonist. She's not middle-aged, though. I'm going to go with The Queen's Gambit.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a book, and I saw this book several years ago, and it was recommended to me. This book about this young chess prodigy, fictional. She's not real. And I added it to my Amazon wish list with it, like, oh, that's a book I'd like to read, knowing like I never actually will.
Right.
Like, which we've all done. We've bought books, and then like, this is a book I definitely could see myself reading, but I'm going to put it on my shelf. I'm definitely not going to read it now.
Right.
Maybe future me will like this book, but. My wife and I watched The Queen's Gambit, and I loved it. I thought it was a great great story. It's like a 7-part Netflix series. Young girl who learns how to play chess, also has to battle her own demons of addiction, and come out the other side. And chess is kind of the metaphor for her life of how to get things under control. I think it's a really powerful story. It has mentors. It has definitely far-from-home elements and how she can kind of come back utilizing chess to kind of rise above it. It's not for kids, but it is really, really powerful. I loved it. I thought it's a great... And I believe the lead actress, Anna Taylor-Joy, just won a... What is it? Golden Globe? Is
that
the
one? Who knows?
I think so.
Yeah, she just won a Golden Globe for it. So, and well-deserved. She's fantastic in it.
I've heard nothing but good things about that.
Yeah.
So.
Excellent. I got one explicitly for kids.
Oh.
Since we've done two. So this is one we've been listening to with Sophia. It's a podcast story.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian. And the great thing about this is that it's a dad who tells the story along with his son.
Okay.
And so the dad is the author of these stories, and they kind of tell the story. And at the end of each chapter, if you want to call it that, or episode, he talks with his son about the story, about what the son liked and what they didn't, and they kind of talk about elements of story as they go through. And
oh,
so they'll talk about, like, what's a cliffhanger, or what's, you know, what does it mean that they went on this particular adventure that we think this might be foreshadowing? Yeah. What's foreshadowing? And talking.
Right.
And so you kind of start to learn some of those elements of story, and it's a cool little story about a kid who's in space going on alien adventures and battling all sorts of puzzles and stuff like that.
So, that sounds really fun.
Yeah. Alien Adventures of Finn Caspian on your podcast feed.
Okay. That's maybe not one I want to listen to now, but maybe with my son.
Yeah. Exactly. This is probably not one that I'm just like tuning into. Though I do, like, I get emotionally invested in the story. And I have, because Amanda and Sophia listen to it a lot more than I and Sophia get a chance to listen to it. And so I'll like miss chapters. I'm like, how'd they get out of this? Like,
oh,
That's awesome. That's
it's easy to get wrapped up in.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Elise and I also do some shared storytelling. We play Dungeons & Dragons together.
Well, we're airing out that dirty laundry.
All right,
there it is. Here we are. Yeah. We do. It's fun.
It is fun. We're in a haunted house right now.
We are.
Cool.
We just rescued a baby, sort of. An undead baby.
I thought you did that last week. Didn't you already do that?
It's been a lot of rescuing undead babies.
Yeah. Okay. We got to get out of haunted house. It's coming.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us where, if they like what they heard, where can they find us?
Yeah. Hey, if you liked this episode or any episode, whether it's about stories or not, you can find all of them on BeyondSundayPodcast.com or on your favorite podcast playing device. We hope that you'll send us an email at, where you send us an email? At something. An email
Beyond
address.
Sunday.
BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com There it is.
Yeah, and I think we also mentioned last time, if you have a suggestion for a topic, we're always open.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You had more?
No, that was it.
Okay.
I agree with you. It's like, yeah, absolutely. Send in your suggestions. That's
We try to mix it up. We sometimes cover current events, the Bible, issues of faith.
Ancient events, current events, future events, all the events.
Name
some
an
events
event
that have not yet come to pass.
That's right. Ooh, that was
nice.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.